Hi there, listeners. Welcome to More Than a Wheel, and you are listening to episode 33 and a third, because that's what records are. My name is Sean M. Whelan, and today I am joined by
Brendan Bonsack.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Whelan, a podcast about creative writing written by me and occasional special guests, but most importantly, inspired by you. Hi there, welcome to More Than the Wheel, and we are coming at you as usual from sunny downtown Collingwood, the greatest suburb in the world, and Castaway Studios. Today, I'm thrilled as fuck to be joined by what I consider a bit of a kindred spirit, actually, Mr. Brendan Bonsack. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure. I say kindred spirit because you also are not happy doing just one thing. You want to do everything like I do. You do music, poetry, photography, film, and you're pretty damn good at all of them, I must say.
Thank you. I don't paint and I don't dance.
Yeah, neither do I.
So there you go. I painted a fence once.
Oh, well, that we can add that to your resume. And I'm sure you have danced at some party or another at some stage in your life.
Yeah.
Surely.
I think I probably danced like a fence.
Dance like a fence. Now, there's a poetry muse right there.
Offensive dancing.
Oh, boom. We welcome puns here anytime. So I'd like to – this is probably something – you've been asked before, but what came first of those artistic pursuits you do quite a lot of these days?
Probably the songwriting.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the poetry and songwriting is pretty, they're pretty similar things anyway.
Yeah.
What is it? A song is a poem with a dance partner.
Oh, nice.
So, I'm pretty wordy in the lyrics, so they're kind of like poems anyway. In fact, the first poem that I read was a song.
Right.
At the Dan O'Connell.
Yeah.
So I was just walking past and thought, oh, that looks interesting. So I went in there and everyone was reading poetry. I didn't have any poetry, but I knew songs because I play songs.
Ah, this is fascinating. Really, so you just happened to be walking past.
Yeah, so I just read the song.
Right.
And got a free beer.
That's an auspicious beginning. And what year was that? When did that occur?
I don't know. It must have been about 3 years ago. It's probably 3 years ago.
And prior to that, you hadn't really engaged in the poetry community that much?
No, not at all.
Right.
No.
Wow.
I didn't really know anything about it.
Yeah.
The spoken word community in Melbourne, that is.
Right.
And then from there, I think I don't know if I met Ben Soller at that one, but I met him somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
Pretty early on there. I won something.
Something.
I won something at the Dan, a cup or something like that. And Ben had filmed it, so he asked me to, you know, my permission. Right. So that's where I met Ben Soller, yeah.
And Ben Soller, for our listeners, is head honcho of Melbourne Spoken Word, doing very, very, very good work for poetry in Melbourne.
He is indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. Running a festival.
Running a festival, which is beginning shortly, is it not?
It is in July.
July.
Yeah.
Jump on board their website for all the details of that. It's a festival well worth your supporting. Yes, I think the program has just gone live perhaps, actually. Yeah. Okay, so that's, yeah. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Melbourne?
Really early on I did, in Montmorency or some sort of hilly suburb like that. But I think we moved to the country another country, oh, a different kind of country. Right. No, Macedon, Macedon in the other hills.
Yeah.
Out west.
Yeah.
And that was a very, I don't know what you'd call that, a very blissful kind of experience when you're a little kid.
I was going to say, that would have been quite a nice place to grow up, actually.
Lots of trees. I got to know trees really well and wide open spaces. Just spent a lot of time roaming.
Yeah. You know. Do you still stay in touch with those trees?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
A lot of them burnt down.
Oh.
Because we went through the Ash Wednesday bushfires.
Oh, wow.
In 1983. So there was a lot of tree clearing after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been quite an experience.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old were you then?
I think I was about 11.
Right.
Yeah. And we were, it was in the dead of night. So it was a really, really horrible day. Like one of those windy north wind furnace kind of days, you know. And we were all just at home. It must have been about 10:30 at night. In those days, you didn't get any early warnings or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just, there's a fire coming, you know. And Mum and Dad bundles us into the car and drove out through the, you know, you could see all the ash in the sky just flying around everywhere. And everything was really smoky. I think it was a bit of an adventure for us. We didn't really realize the seriousness of
it. Yeah,
yeah. I think it's only afterwards that it's become, that I realized that it was traumatic.
Mm.
You know, at the time, I don't think it registered. Because we drove through the town and the town was on fire and there wasn't really much left of that town.
Wow.
Until the Black Saturday fires, that was the biggest one we'd ever had in Victoria.
And was your house?
No, that didn't survive.
Right.
It was the only one in the street that didn't survive.
Wow.
Everyone else, must have been a fireball just landed on top and cleared it out. And it was a brick house too. So you just had the chimney left.
The power of that stuff is just extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah. And one plastic rubbish bin just left sitting there as if someone had brought it over later, you know.
Wow, that's the only thing that was standing after the fire.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that must have been very traumatic for your parents to lose everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. But, you know, they're stoic individuals.
Yeah.
That generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just sort of get on with it. And
bless them.
Yeah, me and my brother cut a lot of trees down. That was my memory after the fires, of just that ash sticking in your throat and your nose, everything smelling of ash and tasting of ash, you know.
Mm.
And we had to cut a lot of dead trees. So it was a kind of strange bonding ritual because we had one of those long two-handed saws.
Yeah.
You know, where one pulls and the other pushes.
And that's hard yakka.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot harder than it looks. I did try that once thinking it would be fun. It wasn't fun. It was hard work.
No, and the more you do it, because the trees are burnt, you're just covered in ash. So, you're sort of like this, you're like ash people at the end of the day.
So did you rebuild on that block? Is that where you're clearing it?
Yeah. Same house on the same foundations. So they just built the same thing. Right there, which I don't know, you wouldn't be able to do that now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They'd tell you that you weren't allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. It was more the Wild West back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, back in the 80s.
Back in the 80s.
So, we just lived in caravans. And
until the house was rebuilt.
Until the house was built, yeah.
Wow. How long did that take?
Oh, it was probably a year.
Mm.
But, I mean, you know, our house is never really finished. So.
No.
You know, you'd move in a year, but there's still no doors or all the cupboards don't have handles or things like that.
Yeah. And I'm very curious about this. Did they take, like, precautions knowing that it could happen again? I don't know what precautions you would take, really.
Oh, gee. No, I would say it's pretty much the same. I think their precaution now is because they're a lot older.
Mm.
If it happens, I'll just leave.
You know. So they're in the same house to this day?
They're in the same house now, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And wow. All the trees are still, you know,
yeah.
Too close to the house.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, they probably just figure that the warning systems are better now, so they'll just leave.
They definitely are,
yeah.
I believe. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And when did you first start writing songs and picking up a guitar and doing that kind of thing?
I think I was doing it around about that time.
Mm.
Yeah. But terrible, terrible songs. I have exercise books at home.
Great.
With those songs in them. But they're just awful.
Yeah.
I think there's only one song that I still play with the band that I wrote, you know, when I was maybe 19.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a long time ago.
Where did was your influence, musical influences, did they come from your parents at all?
No, not musical.
Mm.
Not musical.
So what first drew you to music then?
One musical brother. Yeah. Maybe two musical brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My sister's not. Well, I just love music.
Yeah.
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 It's just great. I mean, I'm not a great musician. I play the guitar just to get the words out, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Leonard Cohen approach.
Right.
I only know a handful of chords.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's what I'm told anyway.
I never really learnt it formally.
Mm.
So it's just the same old mistakes.
Yeah.
Ingrained.
Most of what I do, I've never had formal lessons in, actually. Because when I did study writing, but I studied, I didn't study poetry. I studied everything else and then I eventually ended up a poet somehow. Yeah. And I don't really know hardly any of the formal rules of poetry. Like if you asked me to write a villanelle or whatever they're called, I couldn't. But, and you know, I probably should, you know, you got to know the rules to break them, but I just bypass that knowing part and just break them. Yeah. But I asked you about your old man, your parents, in particular about music, because I think I drew my love of music from my old man, not necessarily from what he listened to, but just his passion for it. And, cause he just played it all the time, but he played a lot of those really bad, easy listening things. Yeah. Yeah. Which, you just fill op shops now. There was a brief period actually where it was kind of cool to have nights of that sort of stuff, but it didn't very last, like club nights of that easy listening music. Uh-huh. It didn't last very long.
Magic 693.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, I went through a period of, you know, hearing that on the radio in the car all the time.
Right.
Magic 693.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I swear it's just a computer. There's no actual DJ there. They're the same pat phrases and the same old music over and over again.
You could be right. You could be right.
Frank Sinatra's getting another 19 cents every second.
So what were your early musical influences?
The Beatles, I think.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, you would have heard of them.
Yeah.
That's with an EA. Yeah.
Oh, right. Now I was thinking of the other Beatles.
My cousin had a box set on vinyl, you know, of all their albums. So, and I borrowed it and I still have it to this day. So I've had it for 30 years.
I remember that box set very well.
Yeah, we used to listen to it over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are the band that just keeps giving, actually. Yeah. Yeah. I get sick of people harping on about the Beatles, but they harp on about them for good reason, really. Yeah. They did a very deep, solid catalogue of damn good tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Pink Floyd came around at some point when I went to high school. Everyone listened to Pink Floyd.
They did, didn't they? I didn't have a Pink Floyd period somehow. I don't know why, but everyone else was listening to it.
Yeah, it's funny now. I don't really like it.
Yeah.
But when I was a teenager, I don't know if it's just like a peer pressure thing.
Yeah.
But I really liked it then.
Yeah.
And I thought Roger Waters, great songwriter.
Yeah.
But I've kind of gone off it now.
Yeah. I feel you. It seems a little bit naff sometimes.
Yeah. And the solos just drive me insane.
It's a little bit indulgent. Now I'm going to get hate mail from Pink Floyd fans. Bring it.
You probably will. Maybe you should edit that bit out.
I can handle it. First the Oasis fans came for me, and next it's the Pink Floyd fans. So it's totally cool with me. Yeah. So then how did that go from like, you know, fiddling around with a guitar in the backyard, in between cutting down trees to getting on stage with one?
I played a few songs at high school.
School Musical?
Yeah, things like that.
Jesus Christ Superstar or something?
No. It's a country high school. I didn't do that sorts of things.
Right.
But I didn't really get into a band until I left home.
Yeah.
And went to uni. And that was just some mates, and I wrote a lot of songs for that band. It's just a rock band, very simple.
Yeah.
Played a lot of the usual kind of pubs.
Yeah.
That are closed down now, you know, the Art House. Remember the Art House?
Yes, I do remember the Art House.
In North Melbourne. And
yeah.
The Tote, yeah. Which I'm glad to say hasn't changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's probably still exactly the same as it was in the 90s.
Yeah, except they do food now.
and the Empress of India.
Ah, yes. That was great. That was great.
That was a great place too.
Great band venue, which is just some sort of yuppie restaurant now, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was sad watching that go.
Yeah, and happened very, very suddenly. I don't know what happened there, but just closed overnight. Yeah.
And so, yeah, just a few different bands in the 90s, and then I had kids and didn't really play much. Yeah, so put it all down, really.
Right.
Yeah.
You should go on a podcast about fatherhood. You probably have something to say about that. I know someone who runs a podcast about fatherhood. Always stealing my guests, so. so you took a little bit of time out from creative pursuits to
performing children. Pursuits. I suppose I was still writing and did some recording and things like that, but
yeah.
I just didn't perform.
Yeah.
Because you don't sleep and you've got to be home and you've got to be sober to drive and things like that, so.
Sounds
it's
terrible.
Just not a yeah. It is. It's just not a.
It's can't not imagine conducive. Why anybody would do that to themselves.
So now I'm back.
I'm sure there's some rewards, though. I'm told. Yeah.
Yeah, kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, now that I'm taking photographs of lots of gigs, I'm rediscovering that sleeplessness. Yeah.
Right.
I found I've developed a skill there, being able to keep going without any sleep.
Yeah. I like to think I have, but it catches up on you eventually.
It does eventually.
Yeah. That's okay. Then you just get a good 8 hours in, then you can start again, not sleeping. It's fine. You can sleep when you're dead, right? That's what I say. And when did you start doing the photography stuff?
That's very recent because I never really had a camera.
So, oh, right.
I borrowed a friend's camera just to play around with, and I was just taking photos of musical gigs. There's a music gig that happens at the Lomond Hotel every month. It's called Writer's Block. And it's just a bunch of songwriters respond to a prompt. And I started going to that. And photographing the evening. And I pretty much go to everyone now. But from that, I was then asked by, I think it was Anna Forsyth, to photograph
Yep.
Girls on Key. And then from there, just got the bug for photographing photographers. Yeah. Photographing poets, I mean.
you're damn good at it. I'm shocked that this is just like a recent thing. So did you just teach yourself? You didn't study photography?
Oh, yeah, I don't know anything about photography.
Well, I would beg to differ from your work, which is remarkable. I've always wanted to be Bonsacked, and I was so happy the first time it happened because I can't remember what gig it was, but I thought, oh, Brendan's here. Fantastic. At last, I'm going to get Bonsacked because you capture poets in an exceptional way, predominantly black and white. What's drawn you to that medium?
Oh, I'd like to give you a fancy answer, but it's actually the thing that made me do it was just a practical thing, because in a lot of venues, the light is so low that you can't really get nice, crisp color photos.
Ah, yes.
So the black and white, yes, you can push it a bit more and you can get away with a lot. You can get away with grain.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And you can cover over that awful purple and green and red that venues have. It was just practical, really.
Yeah, because with a lot of poetry venues, sometimes there's no lighting or very basic lighting or quite dark sort of environments.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. But then, you know, I also like it.
Yeah.
I like that look.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about it. It's sort of the simplicity and starkness of it, and the removal of colour just makes you really focus on the subject, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the texture of people's skins.
Absolutely.
Draws you into their expression a lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
I think. And you notice shadows. I really like shadows, yeah.
I would like to personally thank you on behalf of Melbourne's poetry community for the exceptional work you've done documenting so many amazing poets and giving them so many great profile pics. Because you really are doing really great work there, documenting all that stuff.
Thank you.
It's important, and its importance will be even more revealed in the future. You know, like 20 years down the track, if the planet still exists, then who knows?
And if we can look at the photos,
yeah.
That's one of the thing about the digital era, isn't it?
Yeah,
we're storing all this stuff. But how long is it going to last? Like, it might actually still exist in 50 years, but will we have the technology to read it? Or will that be, you know?
Like Beta, VHS.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that before. Yeah, look, because, you know, it all goes in the cloud and stuff. I don't understand the cloud. And one day all that stuff's just going to disappear.
Yeah, that's right. It's very volatile.
Yeah.
Where is it?
I don't know. In the cloud.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, yeah. And people just kind of march blindly into that. They don't really, you don't have much choice either, but.
No.
But you also, you don't really think about that often. Where is this stuff going? And
even when you think you're doing the right thing, like, oh, I'm going to get myself an external hard drive. I put it all on my hard drive. I know where it is. It's on this hard drive. And then one day I tried to get some of my hard drive and it was just dead.
Yeah.
There was no reason. It was just dead. I took it to store. Yeah, nope, that's dead. Like, really? That's it? Yep. So there is something to be said about those old physical three-dimensional photographs.
Photo albums. But, you know, I keep saying I'm going to print it in a book one day, but I never do.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trouble is deciding which ones.
You must. I can't even imagine how many you have. How many terabytes of photos of poets you must have.
Well, yeah, but I haven't even been doing it for very long. Think about someone like Michael Reynolds.
Well, yes, true.
He's been doing it for over a decade.
Been doing it quite a long time and been doing exceptional work too.
Yeah.
Shout out to Michael Reynolds because he's been doing fantastic work. And the poor guys are lost several times too, like stuff's gear's been stolen and stuff. And I think he's had some disasters with hard drives too. But bless him, because he's been doing it for quite some time. Yeah. Doing great work. Now, why don't you brought your guitar in, so, and you're going to play some music for us, I believe. You've got quite a lot of music on the streaming services.
On the cloud.
On the cloud, yeah, for now. So you better go listen to it, people, because it might not be there tomorrow. Who knows? Quite a lot of material. I was listening to one of your albums on the way here. The name just escaped me. it was like the latest one on the streaming. What's it called again?
There's a latest one that I've just done with Celine Yap, which is an EP.
Oh, no, this was an album, I think.
Oh, this was an album.
Yeah, yeah.
Falling Asleep with the Moon still on?
Correct. Yes, thank you for reminding me. So you've got something newer than that, an EP that's out?
Yeah, so Celine Yap and I work at 3CR.
Yeah.
Radio, community radio.
Love 3CR.
Yep. Who doesn't love 3CR?
I know, right?
Everyone should love 3CR, especially with the Radiothon coming up.
Absolutely.
Everyone should throw some money at 3CR.
Get behind 3CR, because they're an amazing station. They've been around forever. I did work experience there as a kid. And I was from Mornington, and I hadn't really spent much time in the city. And I put together a radio documentary with these two other high school kids, these two Greek kids. And one of them was really lovely, but the other one was really surly and rude to me all the time. And finally I said to his mate, look, why does he hate me? I don't understand. What have I done something wrong? And he goes, no, don't worry about it, mate. He just hates skips. You're fine. He just hates skips. And I'd never experienced that.
Nothing personal.
Nothing personal. He just hates skips. And I never experienced that racism like in reverse. And I found it really quite fascinating. Like, it didn't bother me, but I thought, oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. People hate whiteys too. It's great. Yeah. It was balanced out. Sorry, I got on a tangent there.
So we made this EP as a fundraiser for the Radiothon. So it's got four songs on it. A couple of songs that we wrote together.
Great.
And some old ones that hadn't been recorded. Yeah.
Awesome. I will definitely look. What's that called?
Imaginary Lines.
Imaginary Lives. I'm definitely going to seek that out. And I'll drop a link to that in the... Is that available online? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll drop a link to that in the show notes. What are you going to perform for us today?
Well, I'll just perform a couple. I'll perform one song from... Falling Asleep with the Moon Still On. How do you forget that title?
I know, right? I've had a
feels old now that
strange morning. I always have strange mornings. Yes, well, please. I'd love to hear that.
Hey then, kids, there are you. Back in 1992, the world couldn't get more screwed, could it? Seize the night and fall in love. Safety pins in buttonholes. Be late for work and lose your job. Just do it. I forgot. You know, they put a man on the moon. But isn't she beautiful? She makes me cry. How about you? Well, assembly lines will run themselves. Economies of mental health. Hey now, kids, save yourselves, we blew it. There's a song we used to sing and argue over what it means. History is the flicker, not the candle, and we knew it. It was all for a war to put a man on the moon. But isn't she beautiful? She makes me cry. How about you? Does she make you cry? You cry too. All a song wants from you, a piece of your voice for a piece of its tune. It wants to grow old with you, just hold it. Seize the day now, seize the means, be the mighty tail sting. We 90s kids want something to believe in. I heard, did you know? Now they want to mine the moon. But isn't she beautiful? She makes me cry. How about you? Does she make you cry? You cry too. Does she make you cry? You cry too. Does she make you cry? Yeah, me too.
Yes! That was superb.
Thanks.
Well, when I was listening to that record today, it actually reminded me a little bit of a group called The Apartments. Are you familiar with them?
No.
They still exist, actually. They came out of Brisbane in the late 80s, I think, maybe even earlier. But yeah, something about their sound reminded me of your record, your wonderful record. And
I hope that's a good thing.
Oh, very good thing. Oh, very good thing. Okay. I'm a big fan of theirs. Mm-hmm. And you've also got a ton of books out, maybe 12 books.
Compulsive, isn't it?
That's amazing.
Yeah, compulsive, yeah.
I think that's remarkable. I wish I was that motivated to keep getting material out.
Yeah, well, books aren't on the cloud, you see.
Right, yeah. So, yeah.
If you print them. That said, I never really print a lot of them at once, so I don't have, you know, boxes of books that are unsold just sitting around.
Right.
I just print enough to get through a gig or whatever, and then they usually sell out.
Yeah.
And then I don't have any.
Right.
So, yeah, they're all online and you can still get them. So
yeah.
I can print them anytime I like, but.
Yeah. But that's kind of like them being on the cloud, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is kind of like being on the cloud.
Yeah. So, yeah. Do you own a copy of each of your books?
I used to, but. Sometimes, you know, I put them in raffles or
give
them to people because they say, oh, hey, have you got a book?
Yeah, yeah.
So not many, no.
Yeah. Well, you better get onto that
because
you don't know what's going to happen. None of us know what's going to happen except I – oh, actually, you don't even know this because I don't think I asked you this before, but I'd like for you to read some poetry as well if you'd be up for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Great. We need to get a sample of all your talents. I'm going to get you to make a short film in a second as well.
Well, short film, since you said, it's very hard to know what to actually read, isn't it?
It is when you put on the spot like this.
When you put on the spot.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned short film, this is a poem that I made a short film of.
Ah, perfect. Man, you're on this. You're on top of this. I love it.
Murray Craven has put together a travelling poetry film show, which had a debut in New South Wales in May.
A poetry film show?
Yeah,
tell me more about that. I'm all ears about this.
Well, she's curated a whole bunch of poetry filmmakers and their films from Australia and around the world.
Fantastic.
And she's put together a program, and it travels around to venues and they screen the films, and they'll have a couple of live poets as well. So Matt Hetherington and I think Bron Major were at the launch in New South Wales.
Fantastic.
And is the aim... I can't remember the other places that it's travelling to.
Right.
But I can let you know and you can link to it.
I will. I certainly shall. So is that... So that
it should come to Melbourne at
some
point.
Right. Yeah. So it's sort of currently on tour, so to speak. Yeah. Oh, that's great. I love that. All right. Hit us with some poetry, please, Brendan.
The composer's notes. Everything creaks in this world. My children rode on my shoulders before I was born. Their new finger whirls in the furrows of my brow, and I was born with this feeling. Collapsed shoulders passed by bone, lungs flowered like palms at a stream, waiting for the air to come. In this world, everything creaks. Grass grinds against the breeze, springs of clothes pegs clutch at threads, shedding rust in flecks. The dance of it, the dance, the coarse minuet. The bone keys and old grain pass the tune in pieces. The hands splay like water, pushed into the path of reeds. And I was born with this feeling. The quavers round shoulders silent as the page before fingers, lest you listen, for everything creaks.
So have you made a movie to that as well?
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny because some of the movies that I make for poetry, I put a bit of thought into. But this one, the one that actually got chosen to be screened, I made in like a couple of hours.
Really?
Just like footage that I shot. It was a rainy afternoon in Melbourne, and I went up the Nicholas Building up to the very top and filmed a whole lot of stuff in the elevator and off the edge of the balcony and things like that, and spliced it together with some, stock footage of sheep in Scotland and all sorts of random things. And that's the one that got screened and one that I'd spent days on.
That's a good argument for first thought, best thought, right?
Yeah, that's
just,
right.
Just get it down, get it out there. Don't think about it too much.
Mm. But it's very meditative making films for poetry, I find.
Right.
Yeah.
How so exactly?
I think it just makes you think about the words. Because when you write them, you're thinking, especially if you perform them in front of people, you're thinking of an audience reaction, and you're sort of pitching it to people who are looking at you. That when it's a film, you can think of the words differently and the visuals that don't necessarily have to match the words. But they're...
That's right, yeah.
It's like you have this other canvas to play with. And you can bring out other emotions or interpretations.
Is it the same, pictures? Do you think, as making like a film clip for a band, or is there a difference?
I guess it probably depends on the type of film you're making. If it's a performance kind of film, then I guess it's the same thing, you know, where the poet's actually standing there delivering it.
Yeah.
I've made a few of those, but the ones I make now don't really have me in them anymore.
Yeah.
A lot of poetry films have the performer in them, like a band would.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like because with poetry, the words are much more clear in the space rather than song lyrics. I feel like there might be this expectation to be more literal about representing what is being said.
In song?
In a poem, rather than in a song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm just throwing out that question.
Yeah, well, there might be. I try not to do that.
Yeah, I think it'd be almost impossible to do, like, because there's so much... imagery in poetry. Yeah. You can't try to represent every little image that's coming along.
Yeah, and also,
I get
why do it? I mean, the poem's already telling you.
Yes.
It's already painting that image.
That's right.
So why not use the visuals to do something else, evoke something different? Yeah.
But I think it's a wonderful thing because it really does. We're such suckers for visuals these days. Everything that goes viral... You know, audio doesn't go viral. Only visual things do. And so it just, so to be able to create film clips for poetry really expands the potential audience for poetry as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, mine's, when you look at, there's a great website called movingpoems.com, which curates poetry from all over the world, poetry films from all over the world.
Wow.
And that's a great resource. You can really get lost in there.
Fantastic. I will.
And when you look at that, you come to realize my films are pretty conventional, really, because there's a lot of poetry films where the poetry is the film itself. There's no words in it. It's visual poetry.
Oh, I see. Yeah, oh, right, so right.
It's a poem film, and that's probably the purest form of film poetry, is where there's not actually words, but the medium of film itself is conveying the poetry.
Right. This is fascinating to me. But then by that extension, couldn't you call every film a poem?
Couldn't you call everything a poem?
Oh, now we're going deep. Good question. Good question, Brendan. I'm going to say yes.
Would you call Attack of the Clones a poem? Warning. Sean's about to lose fans.
Not a particularly good poem, I would say. There we go. No, I wouldn't, actually. I don't know. But it's all very subjective, isn't it? I've had cups of coffee that I would call poems, but I've had other cups of coffee I would not call poems.
You'd call them like the TV week.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not that fussy about coffee. I'll drink anything, to be honest. So that's probably not the best example. But, yeah, look, it's all subjective, what comes out of our hearts and minds and what goes back in as poetry. I don't know.
And going back to your question about music video clips, I think there's a tendency for bands to, or maybe it's their producers, to make video clips that don't really explore the song and the possibilities of the song. They're more just a showcase for the band. This is what the band looks like.
That's true. And that's one of the beauty of film clips, actually, because there's no expectation for it to, for film clips to make sense. No one's ever complained and said that film clip made no sense whatsoever. They don't have to make sense. They're really just a marketing tool in many ways. Not that there's great art in making music videos. There can be, but a lot of bands actually don't even like having to make music videos, but you have to, because if you don't, then that's one vast area of exposure that is denied it to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Augie March made some really good, really nice video clips.
They have. Yes. Yeah.
There's one, I can't remember the name of the song, but there's one where it's like a Sisyphus reference and the guy's pushing the boulder up the hill.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Really beautiful location.
Yeah. Lovely there's definitely great art in a lot of music videos. And then, you know, there's some that are just really just trying to get something up there so they can get a bit more exposure. But yeah.
The reality of music now is that you have to make them cheaply. So
yes,
it's not like the 80s and 90s where they would throw thousands and thousands of dollars at the video clip.
Oh, it's now insane. You have to make it in your backyard. The budgets some music videos had in the 90s. There's that, I can't remember the example, but it was like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for a clip that actually looks kind of naff now too. the budgets were insane. And there, that would definitely not exist now.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't think, unless you're talking like really commercial artists, most labels would not even have a budget for music videos, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very, yeah, it's kind of weird, this democratization of art, you know, because we've got, you know, artists can release their own stuff really easily now. But the flip side of it is that they're not getting supported financially by anybody, doing it all themselves.
No, that's right. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's a struggle, you know, because you're really just borrowing time wherever you can and beg, borrowing and stealing to put something together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's frustrating when you have an idea, but you know you can't afford it to do something. So I guess it pushes you creatively to come up with something that you can afford to do.
But that's true. You become your own gatekeeper in a way.
But it is frustrating, you know, every musician will say this, that if you put stuff online, like Spotify is the bane of every musician's existence, you're never going to make money out of Spotify.
No.
You know, you could get thousands and thousands of streams and make $2, you know.
Yeah. But if you don't put it on there.
But if you don't, then you don't really get noticed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people are quite happy to just listen to music, but then when it comes to shelling out $10, it's a different kind of mindset.
It is. Yeah. Music has definitely been cheapened, but then I would argue that perhaps most art forms have really, well, anything that can be digitally replicated has really vastly been cheapened.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's so much of it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's a good thing too. So it's, you know.
I know. I think it's a very complex issue, and I really don't think it's so simple as to hate on the streamers, and because it's just the way it is. Like, hating on it doesn't do anything. You know, we've been coming to this point for quite some time now, really. Once you had the ability to digitally replicate something and be a perfect copy, then we're always going to go down this path. I don't know how we could have avoided it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's opened up. Bandcamp is just an amazing place to get lost in. You can just find music from every tiny little corner of the world that people are producing and just putting out.
Yeah.
You know, in the 80s, that would be impossible because the technology to do this recording would be prohibitive.
Well, that's right. We're at the point in human history where never before has so much art been out there and available in the world, created by so many different people of so many different classes and distinctions. But consequently, there's a deluge of it. And it's hard to sort of wade your way through it. But the power has been put back to the creators in a way, in that you don't have to get permission anymore. Yeah. But it is harder for you to get your stuff noticed. Yeah.
And you do sort of feel like, you know, it's hard to put food on the table if you're trying to live off art. Yeah.
But I think that's always been hard, hasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know people who were in bands in the 90s and they got paid properly at venues.
Right. Know? Okay. Yeah.
And they could make a living out of just playing music.
Yeah. That does seem rarer these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's always sucked for poets, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's always sucked for poets, yeah. You don't go into poetry for...
You have no dreams of making a living from poetry. In fact, the only poets I know who make a living out of poetry don't really. They make a living out of teaching poetry. Be very rare that for people to make a living purely from writing and releasing poetry. I don't think anybody does, really. That's kind of a cool thing about it too, I think, in that it means the only reason you're ever doing it is for the work itself.
For the sheer love of it.
Yeah.
Or the sheer therapy of it.
Yeah. That too.
I don't really stop to think why I'm doing it that much. It's funny. I pretty much write something every day. So
you are quite prolific. Yeah. I really admire that. You write every day?
Yeah, pretty much, unless I'm sick or just too busy.
Yeah.
But I'm usually writing something every day.
Yeah.
I think that started from Twitter because I did a training course once, and one of the fellow training people was teaching Twitter and, you know, how to use Twitter. So yeah. Everyone had to sign up for Twitter. So I signed up and had this Twitter account, and I was sitting there thinking, what on earth do you do with a Twitter account? I'm not an attack dog on the internet. I'm not going to tell the Prime Minister he's terrible.
Yeah.
But although he is.
Yeah.
But
for the record.
Yeah, for the record. But so I thought, oh, well, I'll write little poems. And so in those days it was 140 characters. So yeah. It was, you know, perfect for tiny little poems. And I just started doing that, tweeting those into the void.
Yeah.
And then noticed that people started, you know, following, and then you sort of, I discovered this little poetry community on Twitter.
Right.
Yeah. And so that was a kind of, you know, a public transport ritual, was to write a poem every morning.
Ah, nice. And I think those parameters of Twitter are quite well made for poets, actually, that economy of language. Like, you know, you have to get it within this little shell. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that helps.
Yeah,
that
totally.
It really helps because you have to choose your words really carefully.
Very carefully. Yeah. And then you sort of chop away the dead wood until something remains. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then for a little while there, I discovered there was another poet called Tiny Little Poems. That was her handle. And we used to respond to each other's poems. So we'd have a long poem going on.
Nice.
In responses to each other.
I like that idea. Yeah.
So I think that's just where the regime of doing something every day came from.
Yeah. And then it just sort of became a habit?
Yeah, a habit.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a habit I'd like to teach myself. how old are your kids, do you mind me asking?
They're into adulthood now.
Right.
Yeah. 18 and 20-something, 22.
And what do they think about their artistic old man doing these sort of things? Have any of them taken up those pursuits themselves?
Oh, yeah, they're streets ahead of me. One's at the VCA doing jazz.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Nice.
Oh, they're musicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but.
Yeah, they're both really good guitarists. They used to come to my gigs, but they don't anymore.
Oh.
If you're listening, why aren't you coming to my gigs?
Yeah. Come on, show some respect.
I go to theirs.
So that they both play jazz, do they?
One plays all sorts of stuff. Shoegaze, I guess, is one of one of the terms. And the other one's, jazz.
Nice.
Yeah, jazz. And the VCA plays that sort of jazz that just goes way over my head, you know.
Right.
Too many notes.
Too many notes. Yeah. Just settle down.
But it's clever stuff.
Yeah.
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 I remember going to one of their little concerts that they have. You know, all the students have to do this thing. And they have an improvisation session. And somebody starts with a Tibetan singing bowl to sort of set the key. And they have, like, I think they had like 20 musicians on stage playing pianos and drums and violins and cellos and all sorts of stuff, you know. And they all just kind of worked off each other based on the key set by that singing bowl. And it just sort of grew organically. They played for about 20 minutes nonstop.
Mm.
Yeah. Really fascinating.
Yeah.
And you'd never hear the same thing again.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't kind of like.
It wasn't structured at all.
But it was still quite listenable?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I guess everyone has, everyone must have phrases in their head that they play. And I guess that happens for poets too.
Yeah. You
know, people have their favourite phrases or ways of saying things.
Oh, totally. I find that I repeat myself in sort of motifs a lot. Mm.
Motifs—that's the word. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes it sound like you know what you're doing.
That's right. That's why I said it. Not that I don't have anything else to say, and I just say the same thing over and over again. I think a lot of great artists of our time do that, though. Present maybe the kernel of the same idea over and over again. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that either.
Well, all poetry is just about love and death, really.
That's right. And maybe some sex thrown in there as well. Love, sex, and death? I don't know.
Yeah, but is sex love and death?
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, it is, I think. Yeah, you nailed it. All right. Now, I threw a bit of a challenge at you because I said I was going to give you some prompts and then I didn't even give you them to you till this morning. And you said, yeah, I'll do that. Amazing. What a legend.
So, you threw some at me and I said, I can't decide. There's too many.
That's right.
You choose for me. And I kind of regret saying that now.
No regrets. No regrets. So you stood up and said that I'm going to respond to this prompt. I'm going to get to this. Read the poem first, and then I'm going to say what the prompt was afterwards.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll just explain. When you gave me the prompt, I did what every normal person would do, and I Googled it.
Of course, you did.
Yeah. You know, to see if Kenneth Slessor had written about the same thing or something. So this is my poem in response to the prompt. In a human search engine, the phrase lamb returns cuts of meat and seasoning and slaughter diagrams. Oh, Google, my shepherd, I shall not want. What is the meaning of domestication? Bred for consumption? As the equine is bred for the race? So says my cousin in the trade. They're born to it. It's all they know. His gold Rolex brushing the Christmas turkey. Ovine search engines have never heard of him.
Thank you. I love that image of the gold Rolex brushing the Christmas turkey. Was that it?
Yeah. Yeah, the Christmas turkey.
Yeah.
So what was the prompt?
So the prompt was lambs. Provided by Tilly. So thank you, Tilly. She's a wonderful musician. You can find her on the Instagrams. Thank you for providing that prompt for us. And thank you, Brendan, for stepping up to that challenge on remarkably little notice. Okay, so this is a poem that I wrote this morning as well. And this is in response to a prompt from Jamie Liana. Jamie was actually a guest at our last live show, Sad Is Rad, the melancholy-themed live show. And that was her first ever feature, actually, and she nailed it. So thank you, Jamie, for this prompt, which is a letter to yourself from the perspective that you have died. So here we go. Hi, Sean. Sean here. This is just a courtesy letter to let you know that you're dead now. Don't be alarmed. It happens to everybody. Although, in the Western world, you'd be forgiven for thinking that maybe it's something that we can avoid. But guess what? You can't. Sure, it happened a little earlier than you were probably hoping, but it is what it is. You are what you are, or what you were. But you were actually none of those things. The real you was kind of like a small sticky ball that was the core of you, like a little blob of chewing gum. Imagine this little ball rolling down a hill and collecting all this detriment on the way, and the layers growing and growing and growing until you thought all the layers were you, all those shiny trinkets. But they weren't, and they never were. You are the tiny sticky ball in the centre, buried under all this pretense that stuck to you during your life. You'll be glad to know that you made the tabloid news. Okay, it was just a small article in the local paper, but they spoke pretty well of you. You made an impact on some people, even though you never really knew that. You didn't have to do so much, though. You didn't need to try and please so many people. You should have spent more time pleasing yourself, being the person you knew deep down inside you were, the person behind the layers of meaningless you gathered on the way. Why am I telling you this? To make you feel bad? Of course not. I wouldn't do that to you. I am you. I'm telling you this because I have good news. You'll get another chance. You always get another chance. I don't know what form you'll come back in. I'm not privy to that information. And this information I'm giving to you now will be available to you, but only if you seek it. And you won't know what's there to look for until you do. I know. It's fucking frustrating, isn't it? Why isn't it easier? Well, that's the thing. It is easy. Everything is easy. It's you who makes it hard. So lighten the fuck up, sunshine. Enjoy this little break being at Club Purgatory. It won't last long, and before you know it, you'll be back in the game. But just do me a favor, will you? Try not to spend so much fucking time on your phone next life. And that was that. Thank you. I also have to thank Madison because she provided a secondary prompt in there, which was tabloid news. Madison Griffiths, a previous guest on this show, and a damn good one. But I'm talking to a damn good one right now, Mr. Brendan Bonzak. Are you going to play one more little song for us?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
This is a song my band plays, Accidental Bedfellows. That's the name of the band, Trio. And a lot of people ask to hear this one, so I sort of can't get away from anywhere without playing this. So.
Nice.
It's called Weeds.
Bring it.
Sought me like a letter, penned in such a rush of passion and abandon, and mark return to sender and in limbo. She was not inclined to wash away the dirt. She liked its weight upon her skin, her own piece of the earth. She said, I don't do sex and I don't do conversation. When you come to see me, leave your body at the door. A human such a brittle thing, I don't know what I did in a past life to be one. Well, she wants to be the only song you've ever sung. All those words like bees on your tongue, dangerous unsung. And our love, it's like a collar, let us slip it from the neck of this creature and then banish it and see what happens next. She said, I don't do sex and I don't do conversation. When you come to see me, leave your body at the door. A human such a brittle thing, I don't know what I did in a past life to be one. They say that love is falling, but I never fell in love. I was stone cold still and it just tangled round me. And everybody told me it was weeds, but I guess that was enough. Yeah, they say that love is falling, but I never fell in love. I was stone cold still and it just tangled round me. And everybody told me it was weeds. so sought me like a letter, penned in such a rush of passion and abandon, and Mark returned, sender and in limbo.
Yes! That was magnificent. Thank you so much. That sounded so sweet through the cans, I tell you. These Rode mics, they're pretty good.
little plug for Rode there.
And
is that the point where you flash a little logo on?
Use many, buy lots. No, that was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
What's your origin of that song? How long has that been kicking around?
That's a really old song. That I can't even remember when I wrote it.
Mm.
I could probably look that up, but it's probably 2013, something like that.
And the Accidental Bedfellows. Are you playing anywhere soon?
No, we just had a gig at the Thornbury Local.
Mm.
And we don't have any definite dates lined up, but go to our website, accidentalbedfellows.com.
Excellent.
Or follow us on Facebook. Because we regularly play at the Lomond Hotel or Thornbury Local.
Yeah.
And pop up in other places too.
Yeah.
But I just don't have any firm dates in my head at the moment.
That's fine. We'll provide some links for that. I guess what I'm segueing into Wow.
Wow.
The world of Whelan and Wob, the world of Brendan. So
Wob.
So obviously you've got the Melbourne Spoken Word Festival coming up. Because you're a member of you're on the board or something.
Not the board. The committee.
The committee.
There's no board yet. When it's incorporated and becomes a proper, incorporated entity, then it will have a board.
Okay.
We're still working on that.
Okay. All right. So you're on the committee. We've established that. What can people look forward to with the festival? Give us some little teasers.
Oh,
do your job as festival. Being a committee man.
If anyone came to the festival last year, then it's going to be like that.
Which
bigger.
Was fantastic.
Yeah. So you were in the opening night last year, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
So the festival is, if I get the dates right, the festival is from the 12th to the 28th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The program we haven't launched yet, so I don't want to preempt everything in the program.
Fair
but
enough.
We do know the opening night. So opening night has none other than Luca Lesson.
Oh, love that guy.
So we snared Luca.
Greek god of poetry.
Yep, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
We have someone from Singapore called Stephanie Dogfoot Chan, who is lightning. You're going to love her.
Amazing.
Ariel Cottingham.
Oh, you serious?
She's making a return.
Oh, she is absolutely wonderful, fantastic poet, and a fantastic human being too.
Stoked to have Ariel. Mm. She's doing some workshops during the festival too.
Really? Well, I shouldn't
have said that.
I might just steal her, whip her into the studio for a little interview here because I would love to have her as a guest. She's wonderful.
Yeah, that's right. I'd imagine she'll be pretty popular while she's here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to steal her for 3CR as well.
Yeah, yeah.
We have the two Jacksons. We have Andy Jackson and Eleanor Jackson, who I don't think are related. But with Jackson.
But they're both amazing poets. Yep. Been long-time fans of both of them. Yep.
We have the winner of Melbourne Spoken Word Prize last year, Natalie Jeffries.
Fantastic.
She's coming back. And we have Zainab Farah, who is amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
She's just great. So that's opening night. And that will be...
That's just opening night.
That's
wow.
just opening night.
Crazy.
So we have a closing night party, which will be... A similar lineup,
yeah,
but with totally different people,
yeah.
And then we have lots of workshops throughout the festival, and we have some special one-off shows that will be happening, and we also have special festival editions of regular poetry gigs that people would go to all the time.
Incredible.
So the program will be launched, well, pretty soon. As I'm speaking,
actually, by the time this is in people's ears, it probably will be launched.
It probably will be launched.
So make sure you run not walk, run to melbournespokenword.com.
Melbournespokenword.com, yep.
Yep.
Or you can go to mswpf.com.au, which is just the festival website.
Right. Oh, I see there's a separate website for the festival. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
So the festival website will have all
the express lane to the festival news.
We'll have all the poets and the program as well.
Brilliant. And I'll give you what you do on 3CR a little plug as well.
3CR, spoken word on 3CR. It's our 10th year.
Get out of here. Really?
Not my 10th year. I haven't been there for 10 years.
But that's remarkable.
It's
that's
been fantastic. There for 10 years.
Yeah.
Thursday morning, 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
On 8:55 a.m. So that's how you remember
on your dial.
You get up at 8:55 a.m.
to listen.
Tune yourself to 8:55 a.m. That's good.
Yeah.
And you listen to poetry for half an hour.
Amazing. Wonderful.
And we do a similar thing to what you're doing. We grab poets from the Melbourne community.
Yeah.
And we interview them and get them to perform.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And we also record live shows.
Yeah.
And we put those to air as well.
Amazing. Yeah. Love it. And anything else? Anything else you want to mention that's coming up in your world?
As usual, I'm working on a new book. So
of course you are. Bless you. Give me a chance to catch up, will you?
So sometime during the year, there'll be another book.
Fantastic.
Full of poems.
Yeah.
And people have been asking Celine and I to do an album. From the EP that I mentioned before.
Yeah.
It's had a good reception, so we'll probably work on an album as well over the year.
And I reckon you should have a little thinky-dink about that book of your photographs, because they are exceptionally wonderful photographs. I don't know how you'd make any money out of it. But
no, you wouldn't make any money out of it. No, you wouldn't. It's a labour of love, isn't it?
Yes. Pretty much. Poetry. Everything we do as poets is about love or death or sex or all of the above.
Or below.
But not about money. Or below, exactly. I'm just going to give a couple of plugs for what I am doing.
Wow.
Exactly. So in July, that's next month, I'm very excited that a show that I co-produce, Liner Notes Live. No way, it's not July. It's actually in June. That's a lot sooner than I thought. That makes me panic a little bit. So we're taking Liner Notes Live to the Adelaide Cabaret Festival, which is pretty exciting for the very first time. What is Liner Notes Live? I hear you asking me. And this is me answering you. It's it's like a literary cabaret kind of thing. So what we do is we take a classic album, iconic albums. In this case, we're doing David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust and also the Blues Brothers soundtrack. And what we do is allocate one guest per track on the album, and we just get them to respond to that track any way they like. So it's kind of like a tribute night. All this amazing original work comes out of it. And we have done Ziggy Stardust several times before, but the amazing thing about the format of this show is when you have different guests, it's a completely different show, even if you're doing the same album. But we will be doing the Blues Brothers for the very first time. It was the first time we've done a soundtrack, actually. And that's an incredible soundtrack. And go to Adelaide Cabaret Festival. Well, I'll drop some links to that in show notes to their program to check out more of that. We are super thrilled to be taking part in Indie Pod Fest 2019 this year, which will take place at the Brunswick Mechanics Institute, just next to the Retreat Hotel there. So we'll be doing a live show on Friday the 12th of July, I believe. And they're running a possible campaign, so jump on there, and there'll be a link to that. And basically, you can just pre-order tickets to the shows, but you support the festival at the same time. So please consider jumping on there, and please consider supporting our show by jumping onto the Lux Country online store, where you can get some sweet More Than a Whelan merch. And so you get them some sweet merch at the same time as spraying some love towards us, which we deeply appreciate. I deeply appreciate the support of Lux Country, and I deeply appreciate Derek Myers, my producer from Castaway Studios, every week twiddling the knobs for me and doing a damn good job of it as well. Thank you, Castaway Studios. Thank you, Brendan Bonzak, for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Sean. I've had fun.
Whelan out.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.